Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Attacking Third, a CBS Sports Soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer, joined today, as always, by my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman, broadcaster and analyst. In today's episode, we have a special guest joining us today on Attacking Third, but a quick reminder to subscribe to us on YouTube for exclusive interviews whenever we go live at youtube.com/attackingthird. Today's guest, a two-time World Cup champion, a two-time Olympic gold medalist, former U.S. midfielder, and now author, legend, Julie.
Author. Author. I wrote this whole book. I'm taking credit.
You write. I see you. I see your byline.
I have written a book.
I've seen your byline on a little website called ESPN. You know, I don't know if anyone's heard of it, but listen, we're so thrilled to have you, back on the show. We've spoken with you a few times in person when Attacking Third has gone out to Los Angeles, yeah. But this is your first virtual one-on-one interview with us. So welcome back to the show.
Aw, thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, we're so happy to chat with you because it's a busy time. It's a busy time for soccer globally. Let's start with the big event happening right now. The Men's World Cup is happening right now. United States are in a group with Iran, England, and Wales. I'm sure your days are filled with plenty of hours watching the biggest tournament in the world. Let's have fun right at the top of this. We usually do predictions when we do like game day type of episodes. Do you have a prediction for the
USA winning it all? Let's go. Come on.
That's Sandra. What we like to hear. That's what we like to hear.
I mean, it's a young, feisty group. I know the U.S. team hasn't been playing that well as of late, but really, like, given it's a November start, I feel like everyone's in this weird funk. It's such a weird start time. So I don't think any national team, when you look at these past windows where you were like, oh, they were amazing. So I'm not as worried as a lot of U.S. fans are with their youth. I think it's fantastic. I think you go into this like, what? We have nothing to lose. Let's go. And
good energy.
And this U.S. team seems to have a ton of good chemistry, too. like they enjoy each other. They seem very much on the same page. They're having fun. I love all of that. All of those are such good signs. I'm like, yes, yes. Let me keep reading this.
Yes. I mean, I like it. I like the prediction for US to go all the way because it's been a little bit since they've been in this position and the energy is just different in a World Cup and being in November, it's odd, but because the Men's World Cup is happening now in November, it also means that the 2023 Women's World Cup is just 8 months away, which is just
crazy.
Incredibly nuts. The draw happened. The U.S. women are in a group with Netherlands, Vietnam, and then one of three other choices, Portugal, Cameroon, Thailand. Julie, when you saw the group, you saw the draw for the U.S. women's team for the World Cup. What were your initial reactions, especially Netherlands in this group, right? This is
Well, we didn't get Sweden or Nigeria. I was like, what is going on? How is this possible? I think I actually like it. I mean, I obviously the Netherlands, we have, you know, this short term history with obviously with, you know, last World Cup, last Olympics. But the fact that they don't have to travel, as we know, you know, you have Canada, poor Canada. I mean, they got, they fall out of that top six. So they got taken out of pot one. And then now they've got to go, you know, East Coast, West Coast, back to Perth, back to the East Coast. I mean, it's a lot of traveling for them versus the United States in that group. They stay their first three games in New Zealand. I mean, it's a very winnable group. I think with the expanded field of 32 teams, you see that, that, you know, you have a pretty clear delineation of those top two teams in the groups. But I think it's a good group. I think it's a good matchup. And on the other side of the bracket that you don't have to worry about until the final, I think is what Germany, France, Brazil, there was like five of the top nine teams, I think, were on the other side. So I like it.
I want to follow up on that because the thing about the draws, it's always exciting, right? It sort of feels like it hits the reset button for those World Cup preparations because you're playing international window, friendlies after friendly after friendly. But once that draw gets settled in, it's like it hits a little bit of a reset button, doesn't it? And you're like, okay, yes, the preparation starts now. But with this group, there's still like a fourth team lingering.
Yeah,
it could be weird. A Cameroon. Yeah. It could be a Portugal. It could be a Thailand. Yeah. What is that like when you sort of want to hit that reset button, say, let's go, but you still actually kind of have to wait a couple months to get the full picture of that group?
Yeah. I think what the draw does, it's less about who you play. We've always been of the mindset, like, who cares? We're going to win this frigging thing. And it doesn't matter who we match up when, like, let's just go in a game by game, never take a team for granted and expect to be on top of the podium. I mean, that's always been the mindset of this US team. So it's not so much that they don't know. I think it's just good that you're finally like, okay, the draw happened. This is for real. And because what that signals, obviously, to the staff, to the coaches, to the players, is we've got to pay attention to the little things now. Like, everyone's doing the big things. Now it's all about the details and getting that cohesion, getting that chemistry, getting that confidence, not going on a four-game losing streak, thank God, things like that. So, I think that's the thing. I mean, obviously, they know that they've got to wait until February for that last group, but I think it's just that you're locked in on, okay, let's go. It's time.
You mentioned it. We wanted to ask you about that, too. You know, the U.S. closed out their calendar year with a handful of really good games, right? They went to Europe to go face England and Spain. They closed out with a couple of friendlies against Germany. But within that, there was a little bit of a skid before they said enough of that and closed out the year with that 2-1 win over Germany. You were on the call for one of those games. What's the biggest thing for this team coming out of that window, that stretch of games, as they look ahead to a World Cup year?
Yeah. Well, no one wants to be the team. I wrote about this for ESPN. No one wants to be the team that had a four-game stretch, right? And you could really sense there was some stress within the group. Talking to Vlatko the night before, as we always do with the broadcast group, and, you know, all the stuff he gives us on background, it was like, okay, we're looking at this. And I said, any extra pressure? And he's like, this job is pressure. From day one, it's been pressure. So not really, but obviously no one wanted to be that team. The thing that, you know, I was in less of a panic mode than I think most of the U.S. fans. But the thing that I'm probably most worried about is just how they've been playing, right? It's one thing we haven't, the U.S. hasn't played. Jen Cooper was always sending me stats, bless her, you know, was, you know, texting me before the game and saying, you know, the U.S. has never done four back-to-back-to-back-to-back games against top 10 teams that haven't been at home in terms of friendlies. Like, usually you have that stretch, but they're She Believes Cup or they're part of a friendly at home and they're all at home. And so, you know, for us, which means, you know, obviously losing those three games, you don't want to ever see. But, like, because they had to play them away and they hadn't done that in a long time is why that had never happened. So the thing that's more concerning to me is the fact that, like, we're not holding the ball. We're not playing with, you know, the swagger I think we can with as many creative players as we have. We're not dictating the pace of the game. We're not pressing as much as I think too. And as we should. And the other thing is, it's like most of the goals for the U.S. come off a mistake. It comes off Sophia or Mal just using their pace to get in behind. It's not like, oh, let's connect 8, 9, 10 passes and then it opens up the seam and then we're in. There's no run of play, fluid, gorgeous goals like that. And not to say that you don't want to score in these transitional moments, but that can't be the only thing. And I think that's the most concerning thing, because that this team is creative, as we know, and you have a ton of good players. Why even against top 10 teams are we not holding the ball more?
Right. I think, I mean, you said so much of it correctly, and the mentality, and that's been talked about at this point, as you look at this team, and if you could talk to them individually, right, or say one thing to them, like, hey, this is what you should be thinking about. Like, where should their mindset be? What would you tell them, Julie?
Slow it down. Everything's 100 miles per hour. Like, hey, you don't have to every transitional moment get in behind. Like, slow the game down and then speed it up, slow it down. You know how you see so often, it's just like bounce it off a player, get it back, bounce it off a player, get it back. Our lines are so spread out that you can't bounce it off a player and get it back because there's 30 yards between our lines. It's like, just slow it down a little bit, control the tempo a little bit more. And I love that we're, you know, very eager and it's 100 miles per hour, but it reminds me of Heyo in her early days with the national team. I was like, sister, breathe, just take a breath. Oh my God. She was like a little puppy, just running. I'm like, slow down, stop.
I love that. I mean, yeah.
And that's how I feel they are right now. They're very earnest and that's in our DNA. I get it. We want to run and gun, but we also have the ability with this group to play. Let's play. We can play against the best teams in the world. We should be able to play.
I love it. Speaking of the U.S. women's national team, the history, the legacy, you, Julie Foudy, you wrote a book, you co-wrote a book, you helped write a book.
I wrote the foreword. You guys, let's be clear. Come on.
You were in the room when they wrote the book. You were there. You were involved somehow. And that's
all my book. Yes.
So this is the very first official history of the United States women's national team soccer book. It's called Pride of a Nation, a celebration of the U.S. women's national soccer team, an official U.S. soccer book. I mean, if anything, you wrote the title, you deserve a byline in this because it's long and it's beautiful, but
Gwendolyn Oxenham deserves the credit that you, as we know, that woman can write. And so when they said when Gwendolyn was like, I'm writing for this book and it's this gorgeous picture book. And I mean, it is, it's beautiful. And you flip through it and it's the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, it's the history of the book. And Gwendolyn's writing to that history as well. And there's nothing in one place like this, which is what I love, that shows the progression. It shows what this team's been about for so many years. It talks about the old bags and in a sense, and the pioneers that, you know, became, I consider myself an old bag. And then that you had the group before us in the 80s. So it's all in one place. It's really cool. So yeah, I was asked to do the forward and I happily obliged and I'm really proud of how it turned out.
Yeah, as you should be. So you touched on it a little bit. You knew that Gwen was involved in it. They asked you to do the forward, but really, how did this come about? Really, what were the steps that to getting this started and getting it off the ground to now being a published book?
So David Hershey is one of the writers and editor. He's been a writer and he's one of the editors on this book. He's been around in soccer forever. And he approached me and said, hey, Gwendolyn is going to do this as well. And would you be willing to write the foreword? And this is what we want to do. There's really been no book like this done where it really shows the comprehensive history of this women's national team and all that you guys have done. And in a beautiful way, in a picture book type of way that you could put on your coffee table, but it also talks and tells the stories as well, as Gwendolyn, I think, does better than anyone. And so, yeah, it was an easy sell. I was like, yes, I'll do that. I would love to do that. So, yeah. And obviously with, you know, COVID and supply issues and all of that, I'm so pleased it's just about to come out, but it's taken a long time for them to put together, and they've done a really good job.
Wanted to ask you about a little bit more of the process with that, you know, working alongside Gwendolyn Oxenham and obviously others. What was that process like in terms of getting into a room, or whether those were virtual rooms and sort of, you know, gathering all the information? Was it a wine Zoom? Was it a non-wine Zoom? what was it like sort of making sure that, you know, memory and stories and history got down on paper, essentially?
Yeah. Well, for Gwendolyn, she's a dear friend and she lives in the area, but our initial, so I see her often, we're neighbors pretty much. We live like 15 minutes from each other. But the initial call was a big Zoom with, you know, here's what this book could look like. This is what we want to tell. These are the stories. What would you like to write in the foreword? You know, my big thing is what I love most about this team is it really is this sisterhood, and it's so much more than just, you know, standing on top of podiums. That of course is in, which is what I write to in the forward. It's been important and it's been a focus. Of course we want to win and we want to haul in titles and trophies and all those things. But really the thing that I've loved the most about this national team from every generation is that we just care deeply about leaving the world, not just the game. And women in a better place. And how can we showcase that? And how can we talk about that? And I mean, equal pay fight, of course. And back in my day, it was more for equitable pay, but it's just this history of caring about topics that typically, you know, people would say it's not in your lane. And we say, yes, it is. Everything's in our lane and we're going to talk about it. And we're not just going to stand on top of this podium. We're going to shout for the world to get better while we're on top of the podium. And that's the thing I've always loved about this group. And we've seen it obviously with this current group getting equal pay over the line. And that's been the really fun part about this sisterhood and watching it as it's almost maternal, this proud mama moment of like, oh, our babies are still, they're still going.
There are stories, memories detailing all of these incredible events. And honestly, the read is fantastic. But for you, Julie, what was one of the most challenging parts of completing this book?
Well, again, my part was pretty easy. So I just had to do the forward. I think the challenging thing was, the burden Gwendolyn had to carry in terms of how much she had to dig into, you know, I mean, there's stories about the historical context of our pregame cheer, which I didn't even know, right? Like everyone probably knows who's a diehard U.S. women's national team fan. We do USA, 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 in the huddle. And the USA, I had thought, came from the fact that when we were in China or we were in Europe in the 90s, early 90s, you know, whenever anyone asked, you know, where we were from, when we would say USA, they would respond, oh, USA. And we just thought that was so funny. We were like, what the heck? Well, it actually comes from Italy. The very first trip the team in the mid 80s took, first national team, and they were chanting in the stadium in Italy, USA, USA, and they made that into the cheer. And so it goes back even, you know, predating our 90s group. So it's that kind of stuff that you had to kind of cull out of people and talk to so many different generations, which is what I also like, because you hear from Emily Pickering, who's on that 80s team, and you hear from, Karen Jennings Gabera. And so, you know, April Heinrichs, it's like this, you know, Michelle Akers, it's just this really layered history of this team.
Within the challenges is maybe that also on the other side of the coin, maybe one of the more rewarding parts of being a part of this book and this project, like, sort of unlocking those types of yeah, stories exactly. or is that one of the or oh, yeah, are there totally. Other rewarding parts for yeah. you?
Yeah. And having it all in one place. I mean, you hear the stories and you've read them maybe in articles, but they've always, it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. I mean, I had my parents over the other day and they were like, oh my God, I didn't know half this stuff, right? I'm like, I know, I'm the same way. That's what I say when I'm reading it. So it really is unlocking it in a beautiful way in one place. And it's not just a read, it's visual. It's so visual, which I like as well. Cause I like my
oh, color. Yeah. Oh yeah. The visual aspects of it. I mean, yes, the never before heard stories or like the unlocking of the Usa chant and where that came from, the origin of that, but the pictures, 250 full color pictures. There is a young Julie in there. We get to see you as a little soccer player. We get to see Lori Lindsay, good friend of the pod, Allie Wagner, good friend of the pod, behind the scenes action shots. It's got everything in there in terms of images that fans that are diehards have never, ever seen before. You're looking at it right now. I can tell you are.
I am. I'm going through and it's like, you just keep, I got it on blur. So I don't know if you can see. You just keep seeing. Okay. I mean, look at that image. I love that image.
It's amazing. So what are some of the best photos in here in your mind, whether they bring you joy because it's a memory that you remember and now you get to visualize it a little bit more or pictures that you think fans will love to see. What are some of those for you?
Like just the Megan Rapinoe iconic image we saw from the 2019 World Cup. This one right now I'm looking at is Abby playing Brazil in the 2004 Olympics. I mean, Abby, of course, scoring that goal where I just want to kiss her forehead every time I see her, that like keeps us in it. I mean, we got like that. I can't believe we won that Olympics. So you go back and you look through these and then the generations, right? So you got Parlo, you got Milbert, you got, and then you flip forward to Heyo and Shannon Box and all of these iconic moments, Christy Pierce, Angela Hughley's, remember when Abby broke her leg? I mean, I forgot about all that story and obviously Gwendolyn wrote to that. Abby broke her leg, the send-off game going over to the Olympics in China in 2008. And then Angela Hughley steps up and crushes it and they win gold. So I don't know. I just love, the snow game. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah.
That's in there. I'm flipping through right now. It's so good. Becky Sauerbrunn bleeding. You can always, I mean, anytime Becky Sauerbrunn is bleeding.
If you're a fan of blood, there's blood in this book. I'd love to.
The one where they're celebrating, I think this is 2019 with Sam Uys. They've got their Budweisers and goggles on. Ah, it's good. It's really good.
I love that. I love, look, if folks aren't, if they're more about like, consuming their news or their information, whether it's like this, like in a video format or, non-reading it, there's a ton of images you could just go through and take a look at in this book.
There's
film national teamers doing this from all the different generations, like going through going, oh my God.
I mean, the front and back covers are little kid soccer pictures of,
yes,
iconic women's national team players. And when I first got the book, one of the first things I did was look through and see if I could identify all of them, because they're like little tykes. I'm like, who is this? Julie, I recognized you. Don't worry. But it's
one of the
green machine jersey. Like there, it's just so many different images and types of images, from the little kid pictures to the action shots to behind the scenes. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah.
Usually when we do these, when we do interviews with a special guest, we usually try to like have a little bit of like, we'll throw like a fun question at them towards the end. But for this, when we knew we were going to talk about this book, we wanted to maybe close out this interview with maybe something a little bit more reflective versus just like, hey, what's your coffee order? So this book, we're talking about, about the contents that are in it, the photos, the memories, the stories that are getting unlocked within it as you're going through it. So as someone who has been around and has seen so much, what do you want to see for that next book that comes out a generation from now?
Yeah. Well, the thing you're seeing is I have a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old. And my 15-year-old plays soccer, my daughter. My son's like, too much running, don't want to do that. I'm like, I get that. I agree with that. But my 15-year-old, the thing that's super interesting is as you're seeing these younger teams now coming through, the diversity of player, right? And we're seeing it obviously with the transition into this younger group on the national team. And I love that because I'm flipping through at the end and I'm seeing Katerina Macario. I'm seeing Sophia Smith. I'm seeing Mal Pugh, right? Naomi Girma, Alana Cook. You had back in my day, you had Saskia Weber, Stacey Wilson, Thori Bryant. There was no diversity. Obviously we knew it was a very middle-class white suburban sport. And what I love to see when I'm, you know, cruising the fields, watching my kid play is that there's young gals who come from, maybe Mexican heritage or Hispanic heritage or Latinas and Black women. And I'm like, oh, finally, right? Like we're starting to see that shift. And I just hope that's the next book, is it's going to be a sport that actually is inclusive. And obviously we've gotten to equal pay. But we go to a space where every young girl who is out there, regardless of their upbringing or where they live in an urban area or a rural area or Black, white, doesn't matter their color, they can play. And that's where I think our success will lie going forward on the field and off, because it truly is now an inclusive sport.
Great way to close out. Julie Foddy, thank you so much for joining us today on Attacking Third, chatting all things United States Women's National Team. Everybody, you can download, follow, and subscribe to Attacking Third anywhere you get your podcast. Julie Foddy, let us know where everybody can get the book if they want to purchase this historical document.
I believe it is on Amazon. You can get every book on Amazon. I probably should know what that link is, but I do not know. But yeah, it's on Amazon. You can grab it, get it now. I just wanted to say to you too, and all the tremendous work you do on this podcast and your coverage of women's soccer, how much it matters. So thank you for doing all that you do, because as we've seen with beat writers and the importance of being in this space on a daily basis and the grind of it, I know, but like it so matters in terms of accelerating the game forward. So thanks for what you guys do.
Thank you.
I shouldn't say guys. God, I got to get out of that habit. Thanks for what you awesome women do.
Appreciate it, Julie. We appreciate your time with us as always, whether it's in person in LA or a virtual one-on-one here on the show. Everybody, you can make sure you follow Attacking Third on all social channels. Make sure you get the book, Pride of a Nation. We're also available as video at youtube.com/attackingthird. And we will be back with so much more. Sandra, Lisa, Julie Foddy.
Let's go, USA. Let's go watch it.
Let's go.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.